From the headquarters of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, this is Capital and Scott. I'm your host, Laura Farrar. On March 13th, Brent Renaud, a journalist and documentary filmmaker who grew up in Little Rock, died after Russian soldiers opened fire on the car he was traveling in while working on a project in the Ukrainian city of Irpin about refugees fleeing the war there. Renaud was the first American journalist killed in the conflict. He was 50 years old. Brent, who often worked alongside his brother Craig Renaud, had a prolific career, winning numerous awards, including a Peabody, for work focusing on disenfranchised, often overlooked populations in the U.S. and around the world. Brent's death is hitting the film community in Little Rock particularly hard. On this week's show, I'm joined by Arkansas Democrat Gazette critic and columnist Philip Martin, who knew Brent for almost two decades, as well as Aman Abbasi, an award-winning Pakistani-American director, editor, and composer from Little Rock, who worked on several film projects with the Renaud brothers. Today, Aman is calling in from Los Angeles, and Philip is here in the studio. I'm sorry, very sorry for both of your loss. Can you each sort of tell me, you know, how you found out about what had happened and what your, you know, initial reactions were to what happened with Brent?
Well, I was actually online writing, and I saw a tweet. I can't really remember who it was from, but I saw a tweet that an American was killed in Ukraine. And I started following, and you know, within a few minutes, I realized it was Brent. And then I got on the Facebook page of the, I guess the equivalent of the police chief of Kiev. And there was his passport, press pass. And it looked like, you know, there were other photos that I didn't click on. And I realized that, you know, it was pretty much, that Brent was gone. And I was floored because, number one, I didn't know that he was in Ukraine. We had seen him. Last time I saw him was last summer at the dog park at in Alsop Park. And he had driven down from New York with Chai, his dog. And I saw him and his mom, and we had a good talk. And, of course, at that point, you know, Ukraine wasn't on anybody's radar. I remember we talked about what he was doing, and we talked about some of his ongoing projects, and I just had no idea he was there. I was not surprised he was there, and I'm not surprised in retrospect that he would be in this sort of situation. But
and what about you, Aman?
Yeah, I was in an Uber headed to the airport when a close friend texted me about that, and I felt pretty, you know, yeah, I immediately texted him and just kind of didn't believe it to be real. Yeah, and it was, you know, the last time I had spoken to him were literally just days before while he was in Ukraine, in fact.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you hear from him? I mean, what did he tell you he was doing? Like, what was the situation when you did speak to him?
You know, at that time we were, you know, he told me where he was in Ukraine, and he was going to be leaving to another part of Ukraine in the next few days. But, you know, it was just conversational in the sense that we were just catching up. And that was the nice thing about Brent. He never made too much of anything in the sense that it was, you know, a two-way conversation always, no matter where he was or what time it was. So we were catching up on many things. So I did know that he was there, and it was absolutely unreal. And, you know, to be honest, it still feels pretty unreal when I found out.
Aman, you grew up in Little Rock. Philip, you're in Little Rock. It's a relatively, you know, tight-knit community here in terms of film. How did you, I'll start with you, Aman, how did you meet Brent? And, you know, what was your initial relationship like, and sort of how did you get involved eventually working with him?
Yeah, I was very lucky to meet Brent and Craig while I was in high school, in fact. I met them while I was at Central High. And they were at that time developing a documentary to do for HBO on the 50th anniversary of Central. And I had always had a film interest since then. And I saw these two individuals holding cameras, filming. And to be frank, I was much more interested in them than my teachers. So I was just constantly bugging them and asking them about their cameras. And I don't know how, but I found a way. Like, I think a Craig or Brent gave me their email address, and I was just persistently just like emailing them about what they're up to, and, you know, just wanted to know more, because there's really little points of access to, you know, film community, especially then. That was 2006 or so in Little Rock. There's not much film community. And immediately what was apparent is Brent's generosity with his knowledge and his ability to bring people in, and the same with Craig. So I met Brent in high school, in fact.
And Philip, did you?
Actually, I was, my relationship with Brent was pretty much professional. I mean, we were very friendly, but it would have been with the 2005, the very first Little Rock Film Festival. And I think even before then, I'd seen some of their films and I'd written about them. But I got to know him during that first festival. And the interesting thing about that, I think, is that you had these two guys who had already achieved a level of success in their field and were working basically out of New York. And they really insisted on keeping this toehold, this base in Little Rock in Arkansas. And for me, the beautiful thing about the Little Rock Film Festival was that it was not it really fostered a community from the very beginning. Now, Amon's talking about that you really had no models, nobody to look to. If you're like a young kid who's in high school and you're interested in making movies, you didn't see anybody around who was doing that sort of thing. So they really kind of brought that into the state, and a community grew up around it. I mean, it was so many people made connections and met each other and got to meet people from outside, because they were always bringing in filmmakers. I always wondered how they did it, because they'd bring in filmmakers and they'd treat them so well. It was better mm-hmm. than a lot of bigger festivals. My wife Karen and I always go to the Tribeca Film Festival in New York every year, and we would always go to the documentary filmmakers party there. And one of the reasons we'd go there is because people would find out we're from Little Rock, and they would all come to us, and they'd want to know how to get in the festival. They'd talk about Brent, they'd talk about Craig, they'd talk about what, you know, was happening here. And, I mean, these aren't, you know, this isn't your Steven Spielbergs and your, you know, these are working filmmakers. And you get these people down here, you let them hang around, people see them and they go, well, I can do that, you know, and there's a path right to that. And that was something that we were really lacking. And the fact that we have sort of a, you know, we have people making films here now, a lot of that is due to the Little Rock Film Festival and what Brent and Craig and the other founders did.
Sure. And just for our audience, a lot of people may not know that they started the Little Rock Film
Festival,
exactly.
Right? Yes,
exactly.
They started with Craig, Brent, Onan Brainerd, and Jamie Moses were the four founders of it. And they basically, it was sort of miraculous, because I remember the very first screening. And we were it was held at Riverdale, and we were going down there to show solidarity. And I was afraid there'd be nobody there. I was afraid there might be 10, 15 people. And we go down there, and there's a line that goes around the building. And I was like, you know, and from that point on, it was just on. And I was really, really impressed with their generosity. Mm-hmm. With their willingness to share and their willingness to bring people in and their willingness to, you know, just help people. My sense was, and Amon can speak to this more than I can, that they've just mentored a ton of people, you know, just a ton.
So Amon, you met them, you said, in 2006 when you were still in high school, and you did eventually work with them. I think you went with them to Haiti, correct, for some of their work in Haiti? And I can't recall off the top of my head the other projects, but how did that relationship evolve and develop, and what was it like to work with Brent and Craig?
You know, it's pretty vibrant pretty immediately, both personally and professionally, because I think the magic touch is it's such a sort of human working relationship in the sense that there's a lot of deep care for the person. So Brent and Craig really brought me on very early on, and they, you know, I was interested in all things film, you know, editing, camera operating, music, and they really enabled that. You know, it wasn't a one size fits all way of working with them. So as my interest in film grew, my relationship and working relationship with them grew substantially too. So I didn't really go to college, and in fact was pretty much working with them and throughout. And that was on a lot of projects. And I did travel with them too. And yeah, you know, it became like family, you know. My family knows their family knows mine. And I guess what I will say about Brent is he had a sort of relentless commitment to honesty, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it's so apparent, because for some, that's a really, that can be hard for some, you know, when in the sense that it can turn people off. In the sense of like, wow, this person's just always being real. He's just not going to not be real with you. And that's the big and the small. The small meaning in everyday conversations, and the big in the commitment to telling stories that need to be told. And I just always appreciated that. And that same with Craig. And so when I really started working with them and noticed that's not really how many people are in film, I really clung to them dearly, because I've sensed this was a very kind of rare individuals.
One of the things that's really interesting about Craig and Brent's work is that it's journalism. It's documentary filmmaking. It's this cinema verite, direct cinema sort of fly on the wall thing where you just turn the camera on and let things go and let things happen. But it is still infused with this sort of humanistic quality that's really, it really runs through all their stuff. If you look at a film like the HBO film they made, Meth Storm, which is set in Van Buren County, and it really is this tough look at the methamphetamine epidemic. And there's no condescension. You know, you'll see these horrible people in these horrible situations, and there's absolutely no condescension. There's no flinching. There's no looking away. And it's in the editing, and it's in the, you know, the choice of the frame. It's in the way, but it's in our business, we don't often talk about, you know, there being, you know, about the art of it, but there's a real, you know, they make these documentary films, and they're marked by this humanistic quality that I don't know where it comes from. I think it has to start with the individuals who are actually making the movie. They're actually behind the camera. There's something about it. You sense that intelligence, that creative engine behind the camera. And that's why the movies feel the way they do. And the ones that I always, you know, come back to are the ones like the, what was it, A Shelter, which was filmed in New Orleans, which I personally thought was probably the most dangerous shoot they ever went on, you know. But you see these runaway kids, and he's just giving them their, just giving them a chance to talk.
Yeah, and Shelter was about sort of troubled youth or homeless youth, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And you see that, and you see that in his, well, when you take a totally different project, and he's doing, you know, a film for Crystal Bridges on the artists that are in state of the art. You see the same thing. You see, you know, he's watching, listening. The camera is making observations and notes, and it's interrogating the subject, but it's not remote from the subject.
Sure.
It's a really interesting thing, and I think you have to see more than one of the films to actually get this quality, but it's what marks their work.
Right. Yeah. I have watched some of Brent and Craig's work, and what struck me in particular with one of their documentaries, it was kind of like a mini doc about these unaccompanied minors traveling from Guatemala to Mexico, was the access that they were able to get and the trust that they were able to cultivate, because these kids are in very dangerous situations, and how you would get their faces on camera, even just, you know, to begin with, was really striking to me. Amon, do you have any insight as to how they like got access to these very vulnerable people and gain their trust to actually give them names and be on camera? I mean, that's very difficult to do, even, you know, in print journalism, much less putting someone's face on a television.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy, but it's hard to remain true to that. And the idea is you remain human first, in the sense it's less about anything but just connecting on a human level. It's not about a piece. It's not about the work. It's not about where it can go. But it's genuinely a genuine interest in wanting to know that individual. And once that's truly seen, as most individuals are, they want to connect. And I think that's where it came from. And there was a very sort of small footprint of production, you know, and by design, you know, a small camera that can be held for several hours and very sort of economical production values, in the sense of pans and things that really get out of the way of the actual subject. And I think that was it, what it was, is these very sort of essential fundamentals to allow those stories to be front and center, and beyond front and center, to be true and sincere and to be fully trusted. So I think it was that. But even though that sounds simple, it's often so difficult when it is these sort of larger production companies or these fast deadlines or, you know, all of these external forces. But I think Brent really had that sort of unrelentless commitment to that, which to anyone working with him, it sort of felt like, of course, that's the only way to do this.
Yeah, well, you're talking about the crew. So I think sometimes it's only one person, right? It's only Brent or Craig or somebody out there with a handy cam. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically the smallest way to film.
So, you know, their work spanned the globe, Iraq, obviously the latest Ukraine, but there was always something that sort of, you know, as we talked about before, kept them tied to Arkansas. And some of their subject matter stayed focused in Arkansas. I think you mentioned this story about methamphetamine use. There was the Central High project where you met them, Amon. Like, some people, I guess, would just kind of abandon, you know, a place like Arkansas if they're, you know, making it that big in terms of the film industry. What do you both think kept them tied here and also interested in trying to tell stories from this state in particular?
Well, I think, you know, after seeing so much of the world, and I think the kind of truth that kind of reveals itself is no one place is better or worse than the other. And so why not be committed to a place like Little Rock that has so much talent, that has, you know, their family, and to kind of raise awareness in that place, because they're always kind of individuals to sort of continually promote the underdog. And I felt like Little Rock, beyond being from where they're from, represents that to them in that way.
Yeah, it's one of the things I've actually talked to Brent about this a little bit, and the whole idea is that there's this Arkansas inferiority complex, and it's not unique to Arkansas. It's every place that's could consider itself podunk, you know, from Chicago on down. You know, basically, what we need is we need somebody that points out that there is talent here. Talent is not scarce, for number one. It's talent's everywhere. It's wasted if it's not applied, and if it's not nourished, and it's not like that. And that's one of the things. And there's something about Arkansas. I'm not a native, but I was here and I left. It's like the mafia. It pulls you back in. And just, you know, there's something about this place that feels different, and it doesn't always feel good. I mean, it's like there's a lot of bad stuff here, but you see potential here. You see what we could be, and I think that's one of the reasons that they wanted to stay here. They wanted to have a foothold here.
And Aman, your work is certainly also centered on Arkansas as well and has gotten both national and international recognition. Was there something that you learned from the Renaud brothers or Brent that sort of inspired you to also focus on doing something from Arkansas as well?
Yeah, of course. You know, I had always wanted to be making movies, to be honest. My brother and I had always, you know, early on been making homemade movies. And then meeting Brent and Craig in high school was truly a treat because it made me rethink a few things, like the idea of having to sort of create a linear path or a path that had been created by, you know, what a lot of filmmakers have gone through to make movies. And I very much, after seeing so much of their work, started to look at my own surroundings as a way of being inspired and how can I make movies just where I am. So I will say, yeah, that very much was a big influence and inspiration of, you know, making a movie in Arkansas. And, you know, beyond Arkansas, it's also just thinking about how to make movies in places that usually don't have stories told. But yeah, that was definitely a big influence.
I would say that your film Davion is certainly, you know, I mean, you can certainly see the influence of the Renaud work in there, because it's, even though it's I guess technically a fiction film, it's still got the qualities of documentary, and it still it has that same generosity of spirit. You know, like I said, you're looking at these people that most people don't look at or look away from. You know, and I just thought that was such a neat next step. You know, I don't know what you're working on now, but that was a really, really, really cool thing.
Still something focused on Arkansas, I think. Is your latest project still focused on Arkansas, Aman?
It doesn't take place in Arkansas.
Okay.
But I am doing one in Pakistan, which
Oh, nice.
I think kind of goes in the same sort of direction. But what I will say is, it was really nice. Brent and I would have long conversations about narrative filmmaking as well. And we were very big fans of Kiarostami. That's an Iranian director. And, you know, I wouldn't be able to have these types of film conversations a lot with many people in Arkansas, for better or worse, that's fine. For better in the sense is because it cultivates your own sort of individual spirit of creativity. But then also, you know, you want to connect. And it was really nice to be able to connect with Brent on aspects of literature or cinema, all things outside of journalism too. He had a really big knowledge base. And so when talking to Brent about Kiarostami, it always felt very much like, well, you can do that here. Why not do something like that here? You know, like, and so it kind of started to, I don't know, empower me. It's like, you know what? Yeah, that's true. I could make something here in that same vein. Who says I can't? And I guess seeing them are early on in high school, especially, it very much made me feel like, yeah, there's no reason why I can't make these kind of oddball narrative films wherever. Why not? So I'm just so grateful for that, honestly.
Just a couple more things I wanted to touch upon. And I don't know if Philip or Aman, who could speak to this best, but just sort of on a broader picture, obviously, anytime a journalist or a filmmaker is killed in a war zone, it brings to light just the dangers that journalists face in conflict situations. There's a lot more risks that even freelance journalists take now because competition is so fierce to get the bigger and better picture, the bigger and better story. How do you think that Brent and his brother were able to sort of navigate the risks of being in so many dangerous situations? And were you ever present when they were trying to figure out how to, you know, where they were supposed to be, what they were supposed to be doing? How did they manage that?
I think there's this sort of, Brent and Craig are just so calm and collected and unflappable in most scenarios. And I sense they're conditioned in a way to feel very okay to try to learn about any story. And I never sort of perceived their coverage or their sort of choosing of topic to be one that sort of puts them in the most, I guess, dangerous seat. I don't think it was ever motivated by that. I think it was much more an agnostic approach to whether there is danger or not. If this is an important story, let's really kind of remain true to that. And I think that was kind of the sort of the larger focus. And then they had such a, you know, astounding ability to remain calm and collected under so much of just what I've personally seen. And I think that kind of gave them that sort of X factor for sure.
Yeah. I don't think they're not adrenaline junkies. I think they think they take safety very seriously. And I know that they've, you know, held seminars for journalists who were wanting to start out going to, you know, hotspots and stuff like that, and telling them how to find somebody who you can trust on the ground there, who can be your fixer, and how to do all these things. I think that one of the things that so bothers me is that sometimes in our business, we tend to, you know, be really self-aggrandizing. We really, you know, like want to like be the big deal who's out there doing brave, important stuff. And I think that's all, for the most part, that's all just so much BS. And it's just ridiculous. I'm not going to, no shade in anybody, but I see people who, you know, are self-aggrandizing. And it's like, no, you know, there are guys who are actually out there doing this stuff. And you generally don't know their names. You generally don't know that this is some freelance photographer in Afghanistan who's taking these shots. It can be dangerous to do this work, but most of the time it's not. But these guys were on the front lines, but it was to do the work. It was and as Aman put it, it was to connect to these people, to these stories.
Right. I also think, you know, similar to Off to War, like, I think there was this sort of, this ability to feel like they're never better or worse than anyone. And so if a soldier can go and do this at the age of 18 and kind of fight for their country, you know, why can't, quote unquote, I go out there and cover in the same sort of way? And I think there's that sort of approach of like, hey, we're kind of all the same. And if some people have this ability to go out there as a soldier, why not I go in that same way? It was a sort of public service way of approaching it and how I perceived it, at least.
What do you think made them tick, made them keep going? I mean, I've worked as a freelance. They were more or less freelance. It's exhausting pitching these projects, getting the budgets to go to places like Iraq or Ukraine or Guatemala and to tell these very difficult stories to get access to people. Why did they keep doing it? Philip, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I don't think it was for the money, even though you know, I really don't. I mean, I think that there's something about, well, there's something about this business. I mean, you really do get invested in telling this stuff. And I'm not big on all the malarkey about, you know, the purity of journalism, stuff like that. But I mean, it is important work. And you do understand it's important work. And you do realize that what you're doing can make a difference. I think they did it because it was something they could do. They were good at it. And they obviously got something out of doing it. They liked doing it. And they're, you know, and it was important. And I'm glad they did it. It's simple. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think Brent always remained really, really, really curious, incredibly curious. And that's just like a central trait of him. No matter if there's a camera or not, he's just very curious. And then he's incredibly unpretentious. And so both of those qualities just made him his work ethic so strong, because it was just always his curiosity drove it. And he would never sort of fuss up the work in the sense of it would never get larger than him, you know, in the sense that this story matters because there's this important, you know, edge to it out of his curiosity. They're going to kind of chase that, both of them, both Brent and Craig. So I don't think they ever kind of made it larger than them, if that makes sense. Like, they never made the work like, oh, now we have, you know, a Peabody or an overseas press club. Now we're like the kind of cool kids on the block. I think they kind of always resented that vibe
in the journalism or the arts community is very much just this sort of unpretentious curiosity of what's going on and how can we sort of be of service to that.
Sure. So I'm sure that this happened just a couple of weeks ago and thousands of miles away, and it still might be sort of an element of shock for both of you and then also for everyone else who knew him. It's been a global story. Even the Ukrainian president wrote a note to mm-hmm. Brent's family. But for people who knew him more intimately and sort of overlooked the fact that he had these ties to Arkansas, which is not known as some type of, you know, film sort of mecca, for this community, what do you think this loss means exactly? What's going to be the void that's missed now that Brent is gone?
Well, I hope people step up and, you know, step into that void, because, I mean, I think that he definitely was one of the, you know, idea leaders of the film community here. But, you know, he was first and foremost a working, you know, working filmmaker. I don't know. I mean, I'm just sort of like, I think everything changes every few years anyway, and that we're into a different phase than we were in the you know, the Little Rock Film Festival phase. I hope that people cherish, you know, the idea of what he was and what he's doing. And I hope that, I mean, his work's not done. I mean, it's sort of, Craig's still here. They still are going to be, you know, pushing ahead on these things. But I think that, you know, I think he's going to feel like he's with us for a while. I sure hope so.
I think so. I think he's the losses. This means a lot to, you know, obviously the world and Little Rock. You know, in Little Rock specifically, you know, his presence will be missed. You know, his kind, generous spirit. He was always someone who was there to be supportive to so many individuals, including myself, and to people who are usually outsiders or who don't have that type of support. And so that was very, very important to me. And I know it was so important to so many other people in Little Rock in that same way. And his life's work is going to continue. There's mm-hmm. no doubt. There's a lot to be sort of seen. But yeah, it's gonna take so much time for us all as a community to heal from this. This was big. And I will say, Brent and Craig, they kind of really planted the seeds, I think, for the filmmaking community in Little Rock.
Absolutely.
Because now we do have the Arkansas Cinema Society, but realistically, I think that was born out of the sort of absence of the Little Rock Film Festival. Mm-hmm. We wanted something that was like the feeling of Little Rock Film Festival. And so they really have cultivated a generation of artists, and that's miraculous, honestly.
Absolutely. In the wake of one of the things that I don't guess I was surprised, but one of the things I found out after I, you know, like last Sunday, and I'm not going to use any names because it's their stories, but I heard from so many people who had, you know, experienced, you know, it's like some incredible generosity and kindness from Brent, you know, stories that, you know, like I said, some of them shared them on Facebook and some of them didn't, you know, I just got emails and things like that. And it was, we've lost a good one, you know, a real good one.
Yeah.
Aman Abbasi and Philip Martin, thank you both so much for your time today. And again, very sorry for your loss, but this has been a wonderful tribute to Brent Renaud. I'm sure he will be missed dearly for a long time to come.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you.
The funeral service for Brent Renaud will be held this Saturday, March 26th at 1 p.m. in the sanctuary of Pulaski Heights United Methodist Church in Little Rock. From everyone at the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, we extend our condolences to the family, friends, and colleagues of Brent. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.